What's good, Wordsmiths? For first-time listeners, welcome to the Words Matter Pod with Akil Pinnock. And for those who've tuned in before, welcome back. Once again, it feels good to be back. I hope you didn't think last week's episode ending with no final questions or me asking my guests why do words matter to you was by mistake. This week, we're back for part two of episode 35. The only thing constant has changed with film and television editor, Kristen Valentine. In the second and final and my favorite part of this episode, Valentine spoke about the intricacies of the editing process, as well as her favorite part of the process. She had a long list of editors she admires. She brought up a common but accurate cliche regarding editing being the final rewrite of the script. And we spoke about arguably the biggest topic in Hollywood today, the WGA and SAG-AFTRA strike. I interviewed a filmmaker before, shout out to Victorious DaCosta. I interviewed an actor before, shout out to Quaz DeGraff. But I really appreciate the behind-scenes people like Kristen Valentine who are often overlooked, but actually don't care for attention. They're more into the art. Here at Words Matter, I can appreciate that, because not only do we aim to shed light on well-known storytellers, but the behind-scenes storytellers as well. Anyway, Kristen and I had a lot of fun recording this episode. Kristen is very knowledgeable about the world of film and television editing, which I feel publicly is very untapped. We spoke about the greatness that is Breaking Bad. I would like to add greatest drama, if not TV show of all time. Argue with Rotten Tomatoes, not me, please. Last but not least, shout out to each and every one of my 170 new subscribers. I've never gained that many subscribers within 2 days of running a YouTube ad. I kept refreshing my YouTube because I couldn't believe it, but you know, in all seriousness, thank you so much. I'm here with the intentions of informing as well as entertaining, which I feel in today's media climate is often separated from each other. Once again, everyone please like, comment, and subscribe. Words matter. How does representation work for editors? Like, are there editing companies that have editors, like several editors on staff, almost like being on a record label, or are you signed to an agency? Like, do you have a manager?
That is a really good question. People never ask us that. I love this question.
Thanks.
For real, it's a great question. Yeah, so we do actually have agents. Most editors have an agent. Some might have like managers, and then you run across the very few that don't have either. And so, I mean, I personally like haven't met like an editor who doesn't have either, but it's like once as an assistant editor, right? Like I'm technically an assistant editor on my projects. Like I've gotten additional editor credits, meaning like I've gotten like editorial editor credits mm-hmm. before, but I solely have not edited an entire like project, like an entire episode of television or, you know, an entire film by myself. I have not gotten that yet. But once that happens for someone, once they usually like get to that point of becoming an editor, they start to get approached by different agencies, right? So if you're working in the creative space of you're an editor where you're editing film and television, then some of these bigger agencies like CAA, you know, ICM, Gersh, UTA, they will start to approach you. And you'll start taking meetings and you'll figure out what is the best fit for you. Now, there's also like editorial jobs where you can get hired to work at just like a studio where you might just cut like their trailers or something, you know, or like their previously ons, you know, or up next or next week or whatever. And then the same can be said for like commercial houses, right? Like they hire a lot of like freelance editors or sometimes they have like in-house editors that they keep on staff. But mostly if you work in film and TV and not those other like company based or just like a commercial, you know, based, then you usually have like representation will approach you after your first like major project, you know?
Okay. Yeah. No, I always like wanted to like know how that worked, you know. It's like I kind of look at you guys like an engineer in a studio or something like that. Like a
lot of do those, they have agents?
I don't know, you know. So
good question.
So I'm trying to make the parallels. So yeah. I think about that, but yeah, you know, because you guys kind of work so remotely in a way, like you don't really think about like having a team. I guess that's how
well,
I think.
Is it remotely? Because well, like, I mean, on my projects, huh?
I mean, remote as in like you're by yourself in a way. I don't know.
So, like, usually, like, how it goes is, well, usually, I don't know. It's different for every project. I hate saying, like, usually, but, like, every project is different. So, like, Euphoria, for instance, we usually, our offices, our editorial offices with all of our editing is usually on set. Like, I mean, it's usually on the same like studio lot that all the shooting is taking place. And on a rare occasion, like our lead editorial team will like go on set. And this is very rare because like it just depends on what they're shooting. But like they'll be on set while they're shooting. And they'll cut things as they get done, like getting takes or whatever. So like you have those instances. So it's like, it's not really like remote because we're there still with the rest of production.
Yeah.
We're usually just not like as visible because, you know.
Yeah, that's what I meant more.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. A lot of people just don't know, like, oh, do you just work from home every day? I was like, I've had like one work from home job.
Yeah.
That's it. And that was like during COVID and my editor was in New York. You know, my boss was in New York. The director was in London. You know, that was like it. That was the only thing.
Yeah. It's cool. You could leave the sirens in. You know what I'm saying? It's natural.
Is it really? It's just like so annoying.
Yeah. Do you feel like editors get enough credit for their contributions?
No, but I also think that like people just don't know like what we do, but people who do know what we do and people who are in the business, like they're always like, man, like y'all really be doing, y'all brought the story to y'all made the movie. Like y'all put that, but also like, if you meet like your average editor, like we're not like attention whores.
Yeah.
We don't care enough. We just don't care enough. We love the work. You know, we love the people and we like creating story. So we don't really care enough who gets like the credit. And the people in our community already know, you know, what they know. They know. And so we don't need it like from the public, you know, per se.
Yeah. What film do you think, this is more like a personal question, but what film do you think has the best editing of all time?
Of all time?
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like you watch every single one of them. You watch that whole list, so.
I'm about 10 off. I told you, I'm like at 9. I have 10 more to go on each list. I don't know. The best editing of all time. And see, people are going to hold me to stuff like this, and I don't know if I'm even.
Well, qualified to say that?
I mean, this is what I mean by like, maybe I'm also like taking it way too literal. Like I watch a lot of stuff. I've seen a lot of stuff. And even with that,
just for you, like what's your favorite editing?
Oh, what's my like favorite editing? Oh, man, this is tough. I don't know. I really love a lot of the stuff that's done in, this is just like one of my favorite movies too, but like In Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Ooh, nah, that's a good one.
There's so many moving parts in that film.
Yeah.
You know where I'm like.
And I had to watch it twice just to get it. I was like a teenager the first time I saw it.
That's like one of my all-time favorite like movies. Like, and it makes me cry every time I watch it. I just think that there is such like a fine line when it comes to like movies like that by being like overwhelming, especially when it comes to like the science and the idea of it all and the execution like of it all, to losing like your audience and the story, like losing its power and like performances being lost because people are trying to like keep up with story lines and stuff like that. Because there's literally like, there's like three moving storylines, yeah, like three in movies that film. In a movie,
for sure.
Yeah. And it's just done so well. it's just done so well. And I just really admire the filmmaking in that movie. But like any movie that has like multiple like storylines and stuff that you're trying to follow, I'm always very impressed with the decisions that are made editorially. You know, like, why did they decide to start with this? Or why did they, you know, another one, for example, which is very like similar storyline or whatever wise, is like the movie Arrival. Same.
I've never seen that one.
You haven't seen Arrival? It was nominated for Best Picture. It's done with the same team that I worked with on Dune. Okay. So, yeah, but it was nominated for Best Picture, and it's the same with that. Yeah. Like, you got to watch it, the editing in it. He was nominated for that, too, I believe. But the editing in it, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's just like... it's just done very masterfully. I don't think audiences understand how much thought is put into, do we put a scene here or do we put it here? Mm. Will the audience lose focus? Will the story lose its traction? Well, those type of decisions we constantly mull over. We constantly like test in front of different audiences just to see like if people are following things.
Yeah.
And Arrival does something very similar in that movie, and it is just done very masterfully. Like, it's done amazing. Television wise, if you want to watch some really good, amazing like film editing, in my opinion, is this new show called A Spy Among Friends. It's a new show. What platform is that on? And this is why they're not getting people really to watch it, but it's on MGM Plus, and it stars Damien, what's his name, from Homeland, old dude from Homeland, and oh my gosh, what's the guy's name from Memento, the lead character in Memento? Gosh, Guy Pearce.
Okay.
And so it stars both of them, and it basically tells the story of basically like a double agent who's working among spies, but it's told by on like five different timelines. Like, you gotta watch the what I watch that show, and I'm like, wow, like to maneuver that type of story and be able to get people to still follow it is amazing. I'm just very much impressed with it. I've been telling everybody, like, just watch like the decisions that are made in this show, and it's done creatively, but like smart and just like fun. You know, a lot of their cuts are fun and interesting.
Do you think that like sometimes the editing can be too artsy to where it isolates the audience?
I mean, everything can be too artsy, anything can be too artsy, but yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my opinion, I think it's not even just about things being like too artsy. To me, like, things can be too cutty. To like, why are we cutting so much? Like, it annoys me when I'm watching a dialogue scene, you know, a conversation between two people.
Yeah.
And every time someone talks, the camera is on them. Like, you say something, so the camera's on me. Yeah. You say something, so the camera's on you. So you don't necessarily need that to follow a conversation. You know, like, if you're watching something and someone else is saying something to you, sometimes it's more impactful to stay on the person for their reaction as someone is talking to them. I mean, these are like little things every editor. This isn't like anything special that I'm saying or whatever, but I do notice how like some people cut that way, and it truly bothers me, unless it's super intentional. Like, you know, it might be super intentional, like in Wes Anderson films. He does
I just saw Asteroid City and I was confused.
Were you? Okay. Do you like his movie? He's like my favorite director.
I'm not like a big Wes Anderson head.
Okay. That's fair. A lot of people aren't. Like, I feel like most people I meet are not like Wes Anderson fans.
Yeah.
I love Wes Anderson though. There's something about it that like, it literally, to me, his movies are everything that like my mathematician and editorial mind like need. I get so much peace when I watch his movies. If you watch, like, every frame is like meticulously like constructed. If you notice, like, everything is like perfectly square or triangular, or like there are no like misshaped lines, or like everything is done so intently, you know?
Yeah. I started to like turn on, because I was a film study minor. You know what I'm saying? I'm not.
Oh.
Like, yeah, I'm not like you, but you know what I'm saying? I was a film,
no,
I was a film
that's
study
more
minor.
Than me.
Oh, yeah, I guess you could say so. But I mean, so I had to turn on my film study brain very like recently, because it was always on, but I've been binge rewatching Breaking Bad, and like I just am noticing the editing way more, like how in like especially like the last two seasons there's so much blue because of the meth that Walter's cooking. And like little Easter eggs that you're seeing, like Ted Beneke slips on the rug.
Oh.
He slips on the rug first, right? And then he slips on the rug again when he busts his head open. So it's like they're alluding to, and Better Call Saul does it as well. Cause
yeah, he does. Yeah, I just finished Better Call Saul.
Me too.
Because I rewatched Breaking Bad, and then I've watched Better Call Saul the first time.
So it's like they always give you, the episode will start with a soft opening.
Yes.
And you'll be confused.
Yes.
Like, you'll be confused, like, why is it starting like that?
Yeah, and I love it.
It'll be like a callback later on in the episode.
Yeah,
you know, for
always.
Like the climax of the episode, it calls back to the soft opening.
Yes.
So, you know, so that furthers why I think Breaking Bad is the greatest show of all time. But
I did not have like a greatest show of all time, but after rewatching it, I was like, yeah, there's no.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge Wire fan. Like, I love The Wire.
I love The Wire too. It's up there.
It's, you know what I mean? But the thing with Breaking Bad that makes it so exceptional is that show, I truly believe, my personal opinion, and I will go toe to toe with anybody, there is not one bad episode.
For
there
sure.
is not time for one bad episode.
Mm-hmm.
And also watching this, after just watching, because I just rewatched it last month. After rewatching, I was like, oh, all this shit takes place over a year.
In one year. All of these decisions.
Five seasons. 1 year.
And then the last few episodes.
And then the last episode, they fast forward.
Yeah, they fast forward to like two years later.
But of one fucking year, I said, and I was like, man, there's no way you can just watch that show and like stop at an episode. Because there's so much, you're like, I gotta get the next little.
You have
to
finish the episode. Yeah. Even the fly episode people didn't like, but very important.
That was one of my favorite. I could not wait. When I was rewatching, I was like, when does the fly episode come? When is the fly?
Yeah.
I loved that episode.
Yeah.
There was so much that was revealed in that episode. If you just like look at like their relationship and just like even the manipulation of like Walter and like how he always does with Jesse. Oh my God. It's just masterful. And this is like so like whatever, like film nerd like thing to say. But I don't think that there is anything better. Like there's nothing in my opinion that like comes close to it. I mean, and I loved Game of Thrones too, but I'm sorry. No,
the writing, the editing,
everything,
the cinematography,
everything, like, everything in that is great. The performances, I go back and I'm like, man, everybody in their just distinct performance. Everybody plays their part. Like no one steps on each other's toes. I go back and I realize how much I hate Marie. I'm like, why do I hate you so much, lady? Like, you know, like you go back and you realize how invested you are in these characters from the very first fucking episode.
Yeah, everybody could have won an Emmy for sure.
Everybody, like we mean everybody. Give the PA an Emmy. give them all Emmys
for sure.
yeah, I love that show.
So you know, we went off track a little, but people definitely gonna enjoy that little segment we just went on. But what show? Well, we just spoke about Breaking Bad. I was gonna ask you what show you feel like has the best editing of all time.
Of all time?
Just not like, you know, and I'm not asking you to answer that, like generally speaking, just your personal preference.
Man. Okay, I've talked a lot like about dramas. Maybe I should go into like some comedies or whatever. You know what it is? I'm gonna go into some comedies for a second since I've talked about like some dramas the whole time. But I honestly like, I love like mockumentaries or whatever. And like, you know, the Office style like shows. And if you go back and you even watch like The Office and you're like, man, like some of this stuff is like really like masterful, even how they do like some of their jokes and how they build like story and stuff. You know, they'll literally have someone giving an interview, but then like maybe in the background, somebody's doing something else. But then they show you like a snippet of what somebody was doing earlier in the day to give you context to why there's like this ongoing beef and all. Like there's so much like structural things that go into like comedies that make them so special. And especially given that they're only 30 minutes. And then with commercials, like they're doing these stories, like technically with like 22, 23 minutes of footage. Yeah. I don't know. Like The Office is great. Of course, like, you know, I've been watching, I just started watching and this is, it's heavy on my mind, but it is so fucking funny. And it's just, it's done really well. I'm just really enjoying little tidbits or whatever from it. But, What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh yeah. Danielle loves that.
That fucking show, dog. I was literally in my house last night crying at like 3 a.m. I said, I gotta take my ass to sleep. I'm not about to be fooling with these people. I'm not about to be doing this with these people. But like stuff like that, I really love to pay attention to because you're working with like so much footage in such a little bit amount of time. Yeah. And like with comedies, like it can be extremely tough because people's definition of what's funny varies like or extreme levels, you know, so it's really hard to kind of nail that comedic tone of a show, mm-hmm. you know, and to find like its own like unique rhythm. But I don't know, like I really enjoy those shows. I don't know, like best of all time. And it's really tough.
Yeah.
It's really tough. There's and the thing is, man, I watch a lot of shit, man. Yeah, exactly. I really do. I try to watch everything in the world.
Yeah. Nah, yeah, definitely. If you got a strong, like a large reference bank, it's definitely going to be harder to narrow it down.
So bad.
Are there are there editors that you look up to?
Oh my God, so many. So many. One in particular, this editor, I just had never seen any, like I said, black women. In my first year in the business, I looked her up and I was like, what, this is a black woman? But her name is Terilyn Shropshire, and she edited like all of Gina Prince Blythewood movies. So she did Love and Basketball. She did Secret Life of Bees. She also did Casey Lemon's Eve's Bayou. You know, they recently did The Woman King, which I was lucky enough to help on. They brought me on to help for a week, which was great. Yeah, it was great. Like, and that I bring that up because like I've just never worked with black women, man. Yeah. And that experience was like, I had never felt so
empowered,
trusted. Huh?
I was going to say empowered.
No, really. And empowered. Like they just entrusted me to do stuff. They'd be like, okay, we'll just have Kristen do it. And I said, me, you like, you just trust. Cause I'm used to working in these environments where people make me jump through hoops to like prove like my intelligence or like, you know, trust me with things. And you could tell, like, they really trusted me to do my work and to get, and I was like, wow, this just feels nice. And you could tell they just saw you. There weren't any other, like, there was nothing, like, they just saw you and you worked hard and you got your, and that's all that mattered, you know? And that was really special. But, like, she's amazing. Like, Terry is absolutely amazing. And if you look up anything to do with her career, like, you'll be like, man, like she is phenomenal. Okay. Mm-hmm. But yeah. And then, you know, my editor from Dune, his name is Joe Walker. I just admire his career so much. If you look at Joe's career, he's worked with Denis Villeneuve, who, you know, did Arrival, Blade Runner. Dune, you know, he did both of the Dunes. And he also works with Steve McQueen, who did 12 Years a Slave. Yes. Yeah. So like those two directors are two like heavy hitters in Hollywood, and Joe works with both of them. he literally, like, when one is not doing a project and, you know, he, if he's available, he'll work with the other. And I said, who doesn't want a career like that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where you literally are working with, like, some of the best directors in the business, you know? That's a career that I really admire, but I also just admire, like, how he works. I admire, like I said, you should watch Arrival. Watch Arrival. Him and Denny did that movie, you know, but it is absolutely, it's just, I enjoy that film. Like, it was probably my favorite film that year.
Yeah.
But it's super special. Yeah. And then my mentor, Joy McMillan, like I said, first Black woman to be nominated for an Oscar, you know, like, the trajectory of her career is insane. She started off doing Tyler Perry movies for years, mm-hmm. which it's like, it's really hard to work as an assistant in Tyler Perry movie or in any movie and then get a bump up to an editor in movies. It's really tough. Yeah. In television, because there's so many things being made, so many episodes, there's a lot of like turnover, a lot of like opportunities for promotion. In features, it's really, really hard to get on as an editor, to be promoted as an editor. Because it essentially means that you need to, like, find a director that has, like, you know, content in the works and is trying to, like, bring you on. So, like, I'm just, I'm very, like, in awe of her career and the things and the decisions that she makes. Because now, you know, her and Barry work on everything together, you know. But they went to film school together, too.
Oh, okay.
See? And so, you know, they literally did If Beale Street Could Talk together. They're doing Lion King together, you know, they did Underground together, you know. I'm just like very, there's just so many people I could go on and on. Harry Yoon is an amazing editor. These are people like you look up where you're like, man, these people are like major heavy hitters. You know, like they've just done a lot. And a lot of people that I named, Tom Cross is amazing. He edited Whiplash. Whiplash. Do you remember that movie? About like the drummer dude?
No, I don't.
What? Oh my gosh. Okay, listen. Your assignment is you're going to watch that movie and you're going to be like, that movie was fucking amazing.
Yeah, no.
That movie was like it was like the top nominated film. Like it was his first like feature, like his first real feature on his own, and he won an Oscar for it.
Nah, you gotta send me all of these because I'm definitely a nerd like that. So
you would love Whiplash. Yeah. Men always love like Whiplash, but like anybody would love Whiplash. But like Whiplash is like a fucking like whoa.
Yeah.
You're gonna watch it and be like, what the fuck? You're like, what? It literally is a Whiplash, you know? But no, like, it's a really great film. But Tom Cross is, like, amazing. He does all of Damien Chazelle's films. So Damien did Whiplash. He just came out with Babylon. You know, they did La La Land.
Yeah.
Tom has been nominated. He was nominated for Whiplash. He was nominated for La La Land. You know, he did the Bond movie, the last Bond movie.
Spectre, I think.
So it was called, listen, I don't know anything about Bond movies, but Tom Cross like is probably like he's probably one of my favorite people like in the business. I think that like he is very talented. He's a late bloomer is what I like to call us. We stumbled, you know, into the business maybe a little later than our peers. We got our, you know, our jump start like a little later than our peers, you know. But it's the same thing like with all these people that I named. We kind of jump started a little later. They all kind of jumped, had their starts like later and progressed and got these promotions later. But they're like the most like admirable people in the business to me.
Yeah. Do you take certain things from them and incorporate it into your style?
I don't know if like style of editing, because I feel like editing is such like a sacred like process, like the actual creative part of it. There are technical parts of it where I'm like, oh, I'm going to take what I saw this person do, what I saw this, because it can speed up your process or it can like show you different ways to narrow down things that you're looking for, you know? But I think that like, you know, I evolve my voice like as an editor every time I get in front of my Avid. Like, you know, I don't think that like I approach things kind of the same way every time, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but I feel like without like any I genuinely, like, you know, the first time I ever edited something and like showed it to somebody, like professionally, like speaking, was on Euphoria. And my editor was just like, yo, just cut this scene. Like, let me see it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? I was like, you just want me to what? You know, like, and that's crazy to me. That's like Lil Wayne saying to, so, you know, hey, why don't you just like throw a few bars down real quick and then we'll see if we can put it in the song. Like, what? Like, you want me to do what? Yeah. Like, I don't even, this is my first time in front of the mic. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So like it was, but it was good, you know? And I think that like every time I get in front of my Avid, every time I get with a new team or I get new footage, I really try to like stretch myself to like challenge whatever conventions I might be used to so that I'm always evolving like as an artist and as a creative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What, maybe you answered this already, but like what aspect of editing fascinates you the most?
What aspect that fascinates me the most? I don't know, maybe the fact that like depending on the objective, okay, of the scene, of however we're trying to portray a character or the goal of the director, you can create 15 different versions of a movie or a television show. You know, you can make a character into a villain. You can make them into a very like sympathetic, like victim.
It's a powerful position.
So I try to tell people it is very powerful. So it's very, very powerful. And so that's why like people don't know, but like before shooting starts, we usually start a week before shooting or like, you know, at least like a few days before shooting. And then we're on until air, if it's on television, even after like the first few episodes start airing. And if it's a feature, then it's like up until like, you know, a few like months before it's released in theaters. So we're on these projects longer than anybody else, you know? So we are the ones who are like really invested in this content, in this story, and how the public and how the audience is going to, you know, interpret the overall vision or creative goals, you know, of the project. But I don't know, maybe the fact that like, yeah, we build worlds, you know, with a lot of help, you know, from all of these other entities. But even with all the help in the world, you construct things like so differently in editorial. People always say like editing is the final rewrite of the script.
Yeah.
You know, because you have, that's a common like saying that they usually will say like in film school and stuff like that. But they'll be like, you know, you have the script, you know, how you wrote it. You have how you shot it, and then you have like what you actually made, which is what it comes out to be in editorial. And that, no matter what, always differs. It's never going to be exactly how it was written on the script. Never, never. It always changes. So it's always just about like, I guess, having an open mind and not being so like stuck to like the box or the confines of a script.
Yeah.
Or the original vision, I guess.
Yeah, because I mean, is words, and then there's images, and you know, everybody. You can have the imagination. You can read a book, like I used to read Harry Potter books and imagine what the movie would look like.
Yes,
this is before the movies even came out, right? And, but then, like, some person could just interpret. I interpret it one way, or I imagine it one way. Other person imagines it one way. So you're basically doing what like I would do it like as a kid with a book, and you're doing it with images.
Exactly. Exactly. That's how I usually describe editing to people too. I tell people like writers use words to like build worlds and create stories. Editors do the exact same thing. We just do it with footage. You know, that's it.
You ever watched a show or a film and that was so good and you loved the editing so much that you said like, yo, I wish I was a part of that. Like, I wish I did that.
Yeah, Absolutely. But you know what? Because like being in the business so long, I found that like some of the shows that like I love, I'm like, man, I'm so glad I wasn't, because when you're a part of the shows, it's a completely different experience. Like you'll never see me watch an episode of Euphoria. I'm never watching Euphoria. I'm never going to sit down and watch Euphoria. I'm never going to sit down and watch Malcolm and Marie. I'm never going to sit down and watch Doom. You'll never see me do it. Like, once you've spent so much time with content, it's like, man, because all we do is sit around and watch it all day for months and years on end, you know? So I don't know. I really enjoy Succession. But I always thought, man, I'm so glad I'm not working on this show. Like, I enjoy it so much that, like, I'm just glad I'm not working on it, because there's an element of, like, enjoyment that you lose sometimes when you're working on it. Because, like, you already know everything because you've read the scripts and you know what to anticipate. You know, it's always different, of course, like, when it's formed and when it's in, when you have the final, like, product. But I love some things to just be like a complete surprise. I think my only exception would probably be Breaking Bad. Like, I think that would be my only exception, because I would just be like fascinated. I would just be like fascinated with the work. That would literally be my only exception. But like, other than that, but most times it's like, man, if I love something, I don't know. I also love like Beasts of the Southern Wild. Like, I love that movie. Yeah. It's probably one of my all-time favorite movies. That's something where it was very, like, indie, very, you know, whatever, very small production. But I probably would have loved to have been, like, in the grit of that, you know? To know that you're a part of something that, like, really blew up. It was just a small little mustard seed that just, like...
You want to retain that naivete?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, especially when it comes to series. You know, when it comes to series, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I get that for sure. Because, I mean, even with, like, the podcast, like, I don't like even hearing my voice when I'm trying to, you know, cutting certain things out of the episode.
Facts.
Or, you know, like, it gets tedious and kind of annoying.
You paying attention to details that, like, take away from the experience.
Yeah.
And that's really what it becomes for me. I can't watch Euphoria. I cannot. I'm paying attention to all the baby details. And I do it already with stuff I haven't worked on. But at least it's like, it's very small compared to shit that like I've worked on for months and years on end, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that. In music and sports, we always talk about who the GOAT is. Is there someone who's considered a GOAT in editing?
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean... You have Ann Coates. She'll look up Ann Coates and some things that she did. Woman editor, amazing film editor, amazing career. She did like Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, throwback.
Yeah. And like she has this like infamous like cut at the beginning of the film with like the match into the fade or whatever, like, you know, that was just like a huge thing back then. She's definitely like one of the GOATs of all time. But I mean, you also mentioned like Sally Menke, right? Like these are women who like I just like admire, because I'm thinking about to like Ann Coates is particularly admirable because she came up in a time where like editors started off being
woman.
More so a woman's job. Yeah. Right. Exactly. But then it transitioned into a boys club more so because directors, you know, would sit with editors more and build the stuff and, you know, became more male dominated field after that. And I don't know. I feel like she did a lot of amazing things like in her career. And if you just look at like some of her filmography, I'm going to like look it up to even familiarize. She did everything from like, what did I say? Lawrence of Arabia all the way to like 50 Shades of Grey. Wow. You know what I mean? That's the kind of stuff like she did. But she just has an amazing career. Also someone like more recently, like William Goldenberg. If you like look up his resume, he's worked with like three major directors Most recently, he did Air. Okay. But he has worked with major directors, which as an editor, usually an editor is like married to one director for life.
Yeah.
If you look at Sally Minky, she was with Tarantino. If you look at Martin Scorsese, he has, you know, Thelma Schumacher. They've been together since he was in film school. She's done all of his movies.
Wow.
If you look at Spielberg, he's got Michael Caine. You know, he's done like all but like two of his movies or something, you know. So usually you as an editor, you get with the director and you work with them for a lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, but I am so impressed by editors who are able to work with multiple directors over time. Yeah. Where it's like, wow, you have multiple like successful directors that want to work with you and believe in like your input and want you a part of their team.
And the work still
comes
out good.
You'll never be unemployed, huh?
And the work still comes out good. Yeah.
And the work still comes out good. And I think that that says a lot, right? Because every director is different. So if you can work with like multiple directors and like they're very successful, their projects are successful, they do well, that also says a lot about you as a storyteller. Mm-hmm. You know, like what it says is like you are adaptable. You know, you can be put in any environment and you can make like a worthwhile project.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, like I just need you to like look up like Anna Coates. I was looking up some of her stuff. She's literally like probably one of the most famous, like successful, like editors of our time, you know? But I mean, there's a million of them, you know, there's so many, but you know, Joe, my editor from Dune, is like probably him and Tom Cross are probably like one of the like super like top, like most popular, like recent, like, yeah. You know, editors or whatever in the last like 10, you know, 12 years. If you want to see someone else's career, who's amazing, look up, and I think he was on the documentary, Pietro Scalia.
Yes, I saw it. Yes.
You saw it. Do you remember seeing him?
Yeah, I remember seeing him.
He's amazing. He like won his first Oscar or something at like 29 or 30 because he like helped edit JFK, Oliver Stone movie.
Yeah.
And he is probably like the highest paid editor in the business. And he gets paid also now to be like a fixer editor, which is like you come in on a movie that's already being made, like with the team of creatives, and they say, hey, we're going to bring in Pietro to sit with you guys for like 2 months. You know, he'll sit with you guys. He'll try different things out. You guys can just hash out ideas with him and he'll just, you know, bring in fresh eyes and fresh ideas, you know, and you can do that for like 2 months. We're talking about those type of editors. Those type of editors be making like 30K a week.
Damn.
Yeah. Like we talking about insanity. Insanity type of money.
Can't even fathom that.
No,
Is there like when film editing started to take the transition from analog to digital? Was there? Well, I guess you wasn't there back then, but like, are there still people from back then that's still working that like always kind of reference the old days, like, well, you know, in those days we weren't using the computers and blah blah blah?
Well, you know what's funny is, yeah, like some of the people I just named, like they were all brought up on film, right? And then they transitioned to like digital, right? But with digital, these companies that create like our, you know, our NLEs, our non-linear editing like software or whatever, yeah, they reach out to these famous editors and say, hey, how can we make things better? Mm. Or what features would you like?
To basically like replicate the human.
Or just to make the process more fluid for you. You know, they actually ask them that. So like they get to have like insight on some of these like technological advances, which is like really, really cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I'm sure they do, but like they have the advantage of like at least having some insight or like some influence on the type of equipment and stuff that they're getting and the software that they're using.
I think, that's important too, to just reach back to the generations before you, because I mean,
yeah,
it wouldn't hurt at all, for sure.
Yeah.
And if those films, you know, came out 40, 50, 60 years ago and people still consider them some of the greatest movies of all time, like, I mean, to this day. So obviously, you know, they could contribute in a way to the modern films.
No, like I completely agree with that. Plus, like, as an editor, people always say, like, they don't really like retire. Like, yeah, we like die in the chair type of thing. Like, we don't like Michael Caan, Steven Spielberg's editor, is like 93.
He might have to take a seat. It's crazy.
Mm-mm. That man is never leaving the chair. You know, like, he is not. I'm like, at 93, like, what could this man be doing? And so he has this longtime assistant that he's worked with for like the last like 15 years or something crazy like that. And, you know, he's starting to like give her like promotions and stuff like that. And you see it like in the credits now.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is insane. Like, what could he be doing with. At 93, you know, he probably has like some help with people like doing things for him in the office. I'm sure he has good creative contributions, but like, are you really sitting at the computer all day looking at a screen at 93?
Yeah.
I think that's how old he is. It's like 93 might be.
Yeah, because I mean, even when computers started to be a part of the process, like, he was old then. So
he was old then. It's ridiculous. I'm sorry. Yeah, he's 92. He'll be 93 in December.
But
like, he did all those big movies, you know. Yeah. All those big. He did all Spielberg's movies.
Wealth of knowledge.
It's crazy.
To talk about that movie, Cutting Edge again.
Mm-hmm.
I keep referencing that movie because it really just opened my eyes to a lot of things. But the movie gave a lot of historical context to the change in the film industry, and how really like fascist propaganda during World War II with Italy and Mussolini and Germany with Hitler influenced United States propaganda films to, you know, boost the morale of the troops.
And
that actually changed the film industry. That, you know, led to us, the editing. Is it really like laid the foundation for editing now?
Yeah.
So I want to know from you, like, what do you think is a turning point in film editing as a historian?
Probably, I don't know, like maybe all of that, but probably the invention of talkies.
Talkies?
Yeah. Like when they started using sound in movies.
Oh.
Like, have you ever seen, like, Singing in the Rain?
Yeah.
And just, like, what that meant for, like, picture editorial, right? Because what does that mean? You have an image on screen, and then you have to cut before talkies, before, like, sound was in movies and everything was silent. You know, they would put up a little, like, card with whatever, you know, someone was saying, right?
Yeah.
Think about, like, how I just think
saw
about how much
Babylon shows that a little.
That's exactly. I wasn't going to say because I wasn't sure if you saw Babylon. Like, so, like I said, Tom did Babylon, which I know like a lot of people didn't enjoy. I'm a crazy person. I like loved that movie.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved every fucking thing about it. It was insane. Yes. Okay. But like working in the business and particularly like in post-production and like just to see like technically speaking like how they started off shooting that movie, how they used to shoot a million movies side by side in
crazy.
The desert.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Before they had the lots.
Yes, before they had, because there was no point. Think about it. What would you need it's no interference with sound, you know. But then when you saw the evolution of like sound stages and like what it meant, like people couldn't just like, you learned with actors, it meant more than you just having to be like this animated character or caricature, you know, like you had to have like ability and substance and be able to like talk properly or be heard and understood, you know? And I think that, you know, it caused a huge shift in the business, but in editing, like it also affected like, what do you determine or what is quality art, you know? And that's mostly like what your job is like as an editor. It's not even just about like quality. I like to say what is appropriate or what is fitting, you know, performances mm-hmm. or art or, you know, character development, you know. Yeah. So I think that that was, I don't know, I feel like that was a major turning point as well, you know, technically mm-hmm. and creatively.
Yeah. No, yeah, definitely. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, I mean, I probably, if movies had no sound, I don't know if I'd be watching them.
If you didn't know any different, though, you know,
true.
Like, do you remember when The Artist came out? The Artist came out in 2012.
Who was in that movie?
I don't know their names because it wasn't like major, but it was the black and white movie and it won Best Picture. I think it won Best Picture that year.
I don't remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, so you should look that up. I mean, a lot of people did not like it, but it was black and white and it was a silent film and it won like all these awards in 2012.
That's very interesting for that time.
Yeah.
What do you think is your best work thus far?
My best work?
Yeah.
I don't know. I did some really good editing season 2 of Euphoria.
Mm.
And some stuff I'm really proud of.
And people love, I think that, well, I mean, it's only 2 seasons, but that might be the best season so far, I would say.
I don't know, but I think people are on the fence about that. I don't know how people, you know, everybody is different though. Yeah. Everybody is different. Some people don't like the show, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think Zendaya and Sydney Sweeney, that whole, they killed
Sydney
it.
Sydney Sweeney is a fucking, I'm so glad she got her this attention this year because she's a powerhouse.
Yeah, she bodied that whole season.
She's a damn powerhouse. Like, she is unstoppable. Yeah. She is going places.
She brought every emotion in that season.
Every one of them.
What is, I might have asked you this already, but what's your favorite part of this process, like the editing process?
Ooh, my favorite part. I don't know, man. I love sitting with directors. I think that it is a very special process when you sit there and you craft something with another human being, like a piece of art from the ground up, like scene by scene. And you're like, well, why does that work for you? Why doesn't that work for you?
Yeah.
What is that? Oh, I see what you mean. How can we improve this? Like when you start to really sit there and think about and troubleshoot potential like flaws in the story or questions and things like that. I just think that that is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It can be a lot of fun. It can take a long time and it can be very like stressful sometimes, but it's a lot of fun, you know? And then when you go back and you like sit down and you watch all of those changes and you're like, oh yeah, that worked. What we did here, what we decided, high five, that worked.
Yeah.
Or like when you're like, oh shit, no, that actually doesn't work. Can we take this out? Can we try, you know? So that part's also fun, kind of going back and like watching it all. But I think like as an editor, like it's really important for you to love that process of like sitting with another person and actually shaping the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. So, you know, we spoke about Euphoria. We didn't really get to the idol. But these are, these are big pop culture moments, you know? So even though you have like a more behind the scenes job, what is it like being a part of these big pop culture moments?
What is it like? I think for me, I just never anticipated for my life to take me anywhere like I've been so far. So a lot of it is me like, I'm in kind of like shock and I'm like excited. I feel very like lucky and like blessed You know, I work really, really, really hard though. So like, I get it, but I do feel very blessed and fortunate to find this thing that like I'm passionate about and that like I love to do and I would probably do for free, you know, just because I love the work and the collaborative efforts of a team, to create a piece of art. But also, you know, I love that like our projects are talked about. I think one of the worst things that can happen for any creative is that you create something and it's not talked about. People don't talk about whether they hate it. They don't talk about whether they love it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not even on the radar to be discussed, I feel like that is the worst thing in the world to happen, you know? So I always tell people like, and my friends know this too. I'd be like, y'all know, like, I don't really, like, if you don't like something, you can tell me like, if you don't like it. Like, I'm just not that type of person, because I understand that like everybody is different. What works for me, what works for 50 people, doesn't mean it has to work for the 51st person. So I love the discussion of things. Like if you don't like it, like a lot of people hate the idol, tell me what you hate about it. Please tell me like what little things do you hate about it, and you know, whether it's something I've already heard or something I haven't, the fact that it's a discussion, it really is enough for me. And that's maybe because, like I said, I didn't come from like the film community, and I just never get sick of talking about film.
So it's like, and you're just trying things almost.
Yeah. You know, like, I don't know. It's also just fun to hear people like, even if you hated it, like you watched it, something inspired you to watch it. Why were you compelled to watch it? What compelled you to watch it? You know, that's something to talk about. But also, like, if you loved it, like, what did you love about it? Who did you love about it? Why did you love it? You know, like, I just love talking about my work more so than like watching it sometimes. When people like want to talk to me like about a particular scene or like a song decision or like any of that, like, I love doing all of that.
No, I understand that. I mean, you definitely, you know, I can understand like creating something, and I just, you know, you want to see those views. Like, well, for me, for example, you want to see those views. You want to, I don't care.
Yes.
I don't care. You could be in the comments saying some, like,
saying whatever,
some super like right wing, like whatever, like whatever, like, you know what I'm saying? I like the engagement. Like, you know what I'm saying? I won't even respond to them people. I just, you know, some people seeing it. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And it feels good, like, to be liked, like, but like to know people are just like engaged, it means that they're interested. And I think that even if you don't like something, but you're interested enough to watch. And I think that's something that's really special, being an interesting person, right? Having an interesting product, because everything nowadays is like so fast and easy and based on like what you look like with no substance, you know? So like if something interests someone, then I'm always like, come on, let's hash it out.
Yeah. So, you know, we speaking about all these shows that you worked on, but a lot of people not working on shows right now because of the SAG-AFTRA. And
I'm never gonna be able to say it. It's okay. I'm done.
And WGA writer strike. I'm seeing the protesters everywhere. I mean, I live down the street from the Fox lot, so I'm seeing the protesters every day. So you know, what does that mean for you as an editor?
Oh, it means we've all been suffering forever. No, I mean, my last like real, like full time like project. Well, I've been working with this editor, and Nate Parker. Nate Parker is coming out with a film. It's called Solitary, featuring David Oyelowo. And so the last like 2 or 3 months is weird, right? Okay, so first let's explain, right? Because there are no scripts, okay? Actually, let me rewind even further. Starting at the end of last year, the studios stopped green lighting projects in anticipation for the strike that would potentially happen in May. Mm. Okay. So they stopped green lighting projects like around October last year.
Yeah.
So that means a significant amount of work has disappeared, you know, has been off the scene like since October. Okay. I was still wrapping up on the idol, but then I hopped on like a feature for Warner Brothers called Wonka, which is like the prequel to the Willy Wonka story. And I hopped on that for like you know, a few weeks or whatever. Mm-hmm. I worked on that project for 2 weeks at the top of this year. Okay. Outside of that, I've hopped on this like Nate Parker film occasionally, like over the last like 3 months, like on and off, you know, here and there, but nothing consistent. And that's all because, like, if people don't understand, you know, basically the studios, when they said, hey, like, the writers are going to go on strike in May, we're going to wear people down by not having any projects for people between now and May. So that by the time May rolls around and all the projects shut down, everybody's already going to be, you know, 5, 6, 7 months worn down.
Yeah.
So basically by May, there was a huge collective of people that had been unemployed since like October. You know, so when May rolled around and the strike actually hit, people are already worn down. So now we're 100 days into the writer's strike, you know, and people are already like triply, doubly. Some of these people are approaching a year of unemployment,
which is insane.
You know, I'm barely making it, you know, like barely. I've been taking side projects, like there's literally no work. So when there are no writers, it means that there are no scripts. Okay. And when there are no scripts, it means that, like, you know, you can't like shoot content. Yeah, okay. Course. Like you don't have any content to shoot. And then also what that means is showrunners are the head boss on a television show. It means they're usually the producers and the head writers. Okay. But it means that because they're on strike, you can't continue working on a show because decisions can't be made. So then studios will shut down productions to save money.
Yeah.
They're like, well, we can't go any further. There's only so much we can do anyway.
Yeah.
You know? And so when the actors go on strike too, because they were still like, oh, maybe there can be like some ununionized, you know, work or whatever. But now it's like some of those like projects, like nobody is trying to work right now. Like, you can't even like shoot anything like unionized particularly, but even the unionized actors aren't wanting to work on non-unionized projects because it kind of undermines the efforts of the strike. So essentially what that means is outside of like archival documentaries, which even those documentaries still have writers. There's nothing that can really be done.
Well, you know, like the name of this podcast, words matter.
They most certainly do. They most certainly do. And the thing is, people like think like, oh, writers make like a lot of money. No, like there is only a top upper echelon of like writers and like staff positions that make like a significant like amount of money, you know, and it goes the same with actors. There's a top upper echelon like percentage that like makes a lot of money, but a lot of people don't make like a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
You know, like you have to be like,
there's so many actors. I mean, you watch a movie or TV show, I mean, everybody that you're seeing is an actor. Everyone is not Denzel.
Exactly.
Everyone's not Christian Bale, you know what I'm saying? So yeah,
everyone is not Zendaya. So
so there's definitely a middle class, a lower middle class actor for sure.
Yeah, all the backgrounds and stuff that you see, those people are like usually getting day pay, you know, they're day players. They're like, that's it, you know? So it's real tough, particularly even when you see like regulars, like, I'm not sure if you saw, but the janitor, the guy who plays the janitor on like, what's it called? Abbott Elementary. Yeah. He showed his check was for 2 cents, his residual check.
Speaking of residuals, I was going to ask you, do you make residuals?
Yeah, so it's different, right? So like for writers and actors and everything, you get a separate check for residuals. And I think it comes like every month or something, right? Mm. For editorial and a lot of other unions, it goes toward your group like pension. So it's like you accrue enough hours and those hours like, you know, go toward like residual payments, which then build up towards your pension and like your 401k and stuff like that. So, but yeah, I wish it was a separate check, which is why, like, my ultimate dream is to be an editor, but also a producer on all my projects.
Yeah.
You know, I want the double paycheck and I want that residual, you know.
It's where that, it's like a 401k almost.
Man.
Yeah. So What's next for Kristen Valentine?
I don't know, man. I guess only God knows. This strike was, you know, it's really holding me back. But I don't know, like season 3 of Euphoria was coming up, but you know, we just lost one of our cast members.
Yeah, RIP, man.
Yeah, I mean, he was everyone's favorite character. It's crazy.
So he was like the heart of the show.
Exactly. He was literally the only one who had like a consistent like moral compass. You know what I mean?
Definitely
even
had the
though
most,
like he sold drugs.
Definitely had the most redeemable qualities for sure. And that's important in the drama.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why everybody loved him. You know, it was just like he spoke to like so many people across different demographics and, you know, races, whatever. Like it was, everybody loved him. So, you know, that's been like really kind of tough. I know, like for the team in general, and like, who knows, you know, the future of anything in Hollywood right now. But, you know, the plan was, I was, you know, looking forward to season 3 kind of being like a promotion season, and getting a chance to like edit more and take on like a bigger credit, hopefully. But yeah. I mean, you just never know in these type of situations. Hollywood is very unpredictable. But yeah, I guess like overall, like near future is just like really focus on getting my own like my own editor credits. You know, I just wanted to say edited by Kristen Valentine. Editor Kristen major. Valentine. Huh?
I said major.
Major. And preferably, like, I want to do my own movie. Like, I want to edit a feature with a good team of people. So, you know, I'm just going to put that into the universe. Yeah. The perfect project will find me. The perfect team will find me. And I'm just waiting for that day.
So you want to write films too?
No. Absolutely not. Definitely not right. I'm sorry. No. Just edit. I just want to edit my first movie. Like it's a lot to edit a movie. Yeah. You know, it's a lot. Think about, you know, you edit a TV show, a comedy is 20 minutes. Yeah. That's, you know, that's manageable. Like a feature is literally like almost 2 hours, you know, 90 minutes to 120 minutes. That's a lot of work and a lot of effort to create like a consistent, you know, film, create a consistent piece of art, you know? So I'm looking forward to that challenge. I really, really am looking forward to editing my first feature. Yeah.
That's something definitely to look forward to, man. Yeah. And RIP to Angus Cloud, man. That was sad.
Man. It's very, very sad. Very, very sad. And he was, very loved. And it's just really sad.
You had a relationship with him?
I met him once, season 1, at our rap party.
Yeah.
Him and Algie. And he was very fun. He was very fun and very nice and just like, you know, just chill. You could see why like he was just like beloved. Yeah. And it wasn't even just like him being like Fez, because Fez is a character, but like he's just like a good dude, because it's so easy, especially for young Hollywood, to be like jerks.
Yeah.
Think about it. You're young, you have money, you have access. There's really no, you know, whatever. But his story was, you know, he wasn't really an actor.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just a chill dude. Oakland, you know what I'm saying? And just was about the culture and stuff, and it was just solid. And it's just a loss, you know. It's a really bad and sad loss, especially during the strike. It's like, come on, bro. We've all been out of work. We're already down. Like, this is just terrible.
Yeah, man.
So, but yeah, RIP to him, and sending blessings to his family.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, my last question to you, Kristen, you're an editor of film and television. Not only do you work meticulously with images, but with words and sound. So with that being said, why do words matter to you?
Oh, man. Words matter because they have power. Words are how we communicate with the world around us, and they attract what we bring into our lives. They also attract the type of people that we bring into our lives, the type of opportunities, and they affect other people. So I think that like they matter because they can structure the life that you want to have, you know, and the community that you can build or you can destroy. So I think that it's important that, you know, we value them and we understand their influence. Because they shape so much of our world.
Yeah. Yeah, words definitely build and destroy, like that you said that. So Kristen Valentine, editor extraordinaire. Thank you for allowing me to interview you. Long interview. Yeah. This might be like my second longest interview, but definitely going to be a very informative, educational for people. So that's what I always try to aim to do. So thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. This was so much fun. You asked excellent questions, man. Thank you. I hope I inspire somebody to at least like explore editorial or at least watch the documentary or and you to watch Whiplash.
Nah, yo, send me everything. I'm trying to watch, you know what I'm saying? I'm out. Like I bust my Achilles, so
yeah. Nah, man, you gotta watch Whiplash. You gotta watch Whiplash. That's some UA today. I mailed that to my dad when he told me he didn't watch it. I literally like sent him. I was like, you watching this tomorrow, sir. It'll be there too. Okay. So right. Yeah. Nah, but thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Words matter.
Yes.